All right, boys and girls, my name is Nubias Woolborn. The name on the marquee is Locked On Pirates. We're episode 2 on April 4th, 2019. It's opening day here in the Berg, Pittsburgh. We are live at the ballpark. I am here with my fellow Post-Gazette beat writer, Bill Brink. Bill, this is your ninth year on the beat, right?
Ninth year on the beat. Am I doing the math right? 11? Yeah. Ninth year on the beat.
Ninth year on the beat, and your age, what, 33 season, as they say?
Hello, Locked On Pirates listeners. No, this is my age 30.
Age 30 year. Mm-hmm. Look at you.
Yeah.
Look at you, veteran. All right, so obviously you guys, if you are a Pirates fan or reader, you most likely heard about Bill Brink. He's been covering the Pirates, like I said, for 9 years for the paper. So enough preamble. Let's get right into it. What are you looking for, Bill, in today's opening day matchup?
I want to see Archer in a competitive environment. I mean, we've talked all spring about how good he feels about his pitch mix. We talked all last year about how good he feels about pitching out of the stretch, his comfort with Francisco Cervelli. I just want to see it. It's one thing to do it in spring training, and I think Chris will tell you the same thing. I want to see the pitch mix. I think if we're going to get specific, I want to see, does he throw mainly fastball slider, or do we see a few changeups? Do we see a few sinkers? He's a fastball slider pitcher. I don't anticipate him entirely revamping his arsenal, but one of the things the Pirates said when he got over here last year was, look, you got one of the best sliders in the league. That's great. We also think you could make it a little bit more effective if you threw it a little less frequently. So This isn't going to be really a one-start thing, and it's going to change team to team. But I think that's the thing I'm looking at. That's what I'm going to be watching today.
Well, of course, look, you got a Cardinals team coming in here. They're 1-3 after losing pretty much 3 in a row to a tough Milwaukee Brewers team. What are you looking for with Adam Wainwright getting back in the saddle?
You know, Wainwright's never been a power guy. I shouldn't say never been. As a starter in recent years, he hasn't been a power guy. He's been location. He's been jamming guys with the cutter. He's had one of the best curveballs in the game. He hasn't been the same guy in recent years, and part of that was injury. And I want to see if he can continue to use the finesse that he showed when his fastball was 92, now that it's maybe more 90. And I think he probably can. He's one of the more cerebral guys in the game. He's, you know, a hard worker. I don't think the cutter's going anywhere. I don't think the curveball's going anywhere. It's just, it hasn't quite lined up. It hasn't quite been there in previous years. So I want to see if the finesse, the sequencing can kind of come back and make him continue to be effective.
And, you know, we're looking at it yesterday when you and I talked to Clint Hurdle, the manager. We asked him, hey, man, you got the first 12 games of the year against Central opponents in what's supposed to be one of the toughest division baseball. He was kind of snarky at first, Clint, but eventually gave a pretty good answer. Hey, man, look, it's tough, but, you know, this is what it is. I mean, what do you see with that, Bill?
I think the thing that I always wonder about with intra-division versus outside of the division games is ostensibly you know the teams in the division better.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to then, it's a combination, I think, of self-scouting, right? Because they know you just as well.
Right.
So you got to scout yourself well and know. And the Pirates have one of the members of their coaching staff, Dave Giles, do this. He used to, at least, self-scout the team. And he would kind of treat watching games as though he were an advanced scout for another team. He'd be like, all right, if I worked for another organization, this is how I would attack you. So they have to do that effectively and then also turn that into actionable steps to kind of close those holes. Because if you know each other really well, right, part of it's just execution.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like there's any secrets on either side.
Right.
But I do think a part of it is you got to be able to kind of, what's the edge we can get? We see them 19 times a year. They see us 19 times a year. We're really familiar. There's a lot of data on the batter-pitcher matchups. Where can we just get that extra little edge? And I think self-scouting could provide it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting thing, too, with this Pirates club. Also, a weird series here. Well, you only play 2 games against the Cardinals with the off day on Tuesday.
Yeah, and they're having a lot of fun with that, with the pitching, with the starting rotation and the rain out on Saturday. And, you know, they kind of told Joe Musgrove, hey, what you're going to do is you're going to piggyback with Trevor, and that worked out just fine. They got a win on Sunday. I think in 4 days it'll be fine. They'll be rolling through the rotation. It won't really matter. I think they're probably going to not hate having the off day tomorrow because they went from Florida to Houston to Cincinnati to play in 35-degree weather. They're going to play today. It's roughly 9 degrees outside.
It's a little nippy.
They're going to have tomorrow. I think that's probably as best they could hope for, to just, I don't know, cook breakfast in their own, you know, unpack a suitcase. I think it'll help them.
Yeah, I think it'll help him too. And actually, real quick, we're going to take a quick pause. We're going to hear from both Musgrove and Tyler Williams on how they thought about the outing, how they felt about it. When we come back with Bill Brink, we'll get into this game, his thoughts and projections on the season. This is Locked On Pirates. Stick and stay. We'll be right here.
I think the whole way the schedule broke down, it wasn't really any options. It was either throw off one guy's schedule or throw off the other four guys' schedule. And I thought it was better to just, you know, sacrifice a start, get some work out of the pen, and get back on track with everyone.
You know, it sounds like Clint said that it was kind of, Clint said that, you know, it was a selfless move on your part. Instead of interrupting four other guys' schedules, you opted to interrupt yours. I mean, what's that like for you to have that get the short end of the stick through no fault of your own?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the other four guys would have done the same thing had they been in my situation. You know, I got a little bit of time in the bullpen, so can always work on the fly. I got the mindset that I think plays well out of the bullpen, so I felt like it was just kind of better for everyone all around. And for me, I can go out and throw my two innings and get a little bit of work in and then jump back on schedule.
Feeling good for sharp, first one of the season?
Not at all. Not at all. I got six outs, though, and, you know, clean things up between now and the next start.
It looks sharp.
Yeah, I mean, I got the results for there, but I didn't really have the consistency on the stuff that I wanted. But I was able to – my sinker was good. I was able to get ground balls with that. And that's a three-ball count, which I might have. I didn't get ahead of it as very well, but the sinker was good. I was able to get balls on the ground when I needed to.
Thank you. Just like watching Trevor just pick up whenever he left off last season.
That was incredible. We didn't expect anything less from him. He prepared really well, and, you know, we talked about the season he had last year. You can't really go out there and, you know, expect yourself to do the same thing. I think he has higher expectations from last year. You know, he didn't get off to a great start out of the gate, and I think he wants to set that straight and, you know, get out the way he set the second half out of the gate this year.
It's kind of hard, though. I mean, what he did in the second half of last year,
it's
not a big time. Yeah. Is that a little harder when you come back after something like that? If he goes up two or three runs, people are saying,
No, I don't think so. I think that's exactly where he has to tell himself, you know, I'm not going to try to be the same guy I was last year. You know, he's just going to try to pick up where he left off and, you know, continue to improve. And I think he went out on a really good note. And I think going into the offseason, it's always a, you know, good feeling going out strong and feeling like you're in a good place. Just try to pick up where you left off.
He's run producing now, too.
Yeah, two RBIs already, huh?
How do you guys, he was talking about you guys keeping each other accountable. How does that translate? Is it conversations? Is it just ways in which you guys communicate?
Yeah. We constantly talk between starts. During starts, we go out and watch each other's bullpens. We eat together. You know, it sounds a little cheesy, but the more time we spend together away from baseball and just talking, you know, whether it's relationships or whether it's, you know, jokes or what you watched last night, just the friendly camaraderie makes it more comfortable and makes you a little easier to share things about your game, and it makes you a little bit more comfortable sharing things that, you know, could help someone else that you might feel a little bit vulnerable letting out there. But everyone here is really good, even our relievers. You know, we talk with them when they come in and they close out games for us. You know, we let them know what we felt like we were doing right, and they were on the same page, you know, coming in with an attack plan to base off of what we just did. So it's good communication.
We stuck with our game plan. You know, with the new lineup that they've been running out, they have new guys, so it was nice to get a look from JMO on opening night and kind of seeing what they're doing. And we carried that over into today and executed our game plan.
You really weren't any quote unquote trouble until the sixth inning. How'd you stay calm and work your way through that, especially the event with Puig to end it?
Yeah, you know, it was, we were rolling pretty good, and they got a few hits at the end, but we were able to stay within and just focus on just me and Survey, and so focus on the glove and trust it in that he was going to help navigate us out of it.
Would you enjoy more the six shutout innings or doubling your career RBI total today?
I'm glad that we got the win today. I'm glad that we're going back home and happy for the home opener, and we got a happy flight today.
Did it feel kind of different having Musgrove come behind you there?
I didn't notice it. I knew it was going to be our game. You know, we joked before the game, you know, let's be good today, but let's not be too good, because then they might fall in love with that Williams-Musgrove combo. But it was glad we got his work in, and, you know, it was just an unfortunate bounce for him since it was a rain out. But you know, did I notice it? No, I know. I know he's a shutdown guy. I know, and I was, you know, even if it wasn't our dogs at the back end of the bullpen, I knew he was going to help us get zeros.
I know it's just one of 32 or 33, but it's a little extra special to get out of the game.
us?
Yeah, it's good to get off on the right foot for 2019. It's something to build off, you know, my next.
All right, so yeah, now we just heard from Trevor Williams as well as Joe Musgrove, and you know their thoughts on that, their outings as well as you know pitching back off each other, and the Pirates' shutout win against the Reds over in Cincinnati on Sunday. Back here as we get ready to talk more Pirates with Bill Brink, let's get into your thoughts on the season. I know it's early. Only two games after the rain out in Cincinnati. By the way, that was a fun day, wasn't it?
Yes, it was well-timed. I mean, it was during the Elite Eight.
That's, there you go.
You're going to have a rain out. That's the time to do it.
Exactly. Everybody got to watch the games, including Neil Huntington. And actually, now that you said Neil Huntington, I said Neil Huntington. He gave some interesting thoughts on the anonymous scout stuff. By now, it's made major news and big things. And, you know, some people say, well, the scout was right. But the scout may have had some valid points on Josh Bell's defense, but you got to admit, there were some undertones there.
Well, I think where I agree with Neil most is that it seemed like a personal attack. Like, mm-hmm. there are critiques and criticisms of Josh Bell that are accurate.
Right.
He is not a good defensive first baseman. He has been trying for the better part of 3 years now to turn himself into a good defensive first baseman, and it just is not consistently taking root. That is not, as literally everybody who we've talked to has said, not for lack of trying. He is mm-hmm. out there working.
Right.
But it's just not happening.
We've seen him on the backfield. Yeah. I mean, we've seen him. We've seen him doing it. We've seen him working.
It's just not there. Right. Now, the tone of and just in the prevalence, and like, I don't know, if you haven't read the online version of this, it's a condensed version in the actual physical magazine. The online version is much longer. Bell's in like every negative thought.
Yeah, right.
Everything, like, he's in there like five times. It just seems like a little bit over the line. I think, and Neil made another good point. He said, look, well, he hates anonymous scouts in general. That's, I mean, we've had those interactions over
right.
the years. But he conceded kind of that, like, yeah, there's a difference between a helpful analysis of a player's tools and strengths and weaknesses and just, like, ragging on a guy. And that seemed to be what they were doing with Bell.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And you know, you've been around this team for a long time, man. So what have you gotten to know with a guy like Neil, with a guy like Frank, with a guy like Clint Hurdle?
Well, the thing that I think is relevant here is Neil will take criticism of himself and just take it and just wear it.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody comes after his people, he really does not like that. He has the back of members of his organization, and I think that's something to be applauded. Because it's mostly behind the scenes, and it, you know, this, he was asked about this on the radio, so that's how it became more of a in front of the scenes
right.
type of thing. But he is loyal. He cares about his people, and he will defend them if he feels as though they've been slighted. And I think there are certain things that kind of get his attention more than others. He does not like it when people criticize his medical staff or the health of his players. I think this is another one where he does not like some of the language that was used. And I think you have to be careful if you're a scout or an evaluator or a writer, because it's possible to say that a Latin American player is a freak athlete. He could be really athletic.
Mm-hmm.
Starling Marte is a freak athlete. It's possible to say that a white guy is cerebral. I think I called Adam Wainwright cerebral 9 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. But he's a smart guy. He is smart. Right.
But you can't just do that out of laziness. It mm-hmm. actually has to be backed up.
Right.
And I think that's where scouts sometimes, and I think it's less prevalent now, but obviously it's still happening,
right.
fall into just a, it's not a conscious thing. I hope it's not a conscious thing.
Well, I mean, but, and, you know, but there's definitely latent and unconscious racism and things. I mean, we could, that's a whole show for another day, for another topic that won't get either one of us in trouble with our good friends at the Post-Gazette, probably. But that being said, this, because we talk about it all day. Let's segue from there real quick. Give me your predictions and thoughts on the season if you're comfortable doing that kind of thing.
I've been hovering around 84 wins since like the beginning of spring training. Nothing has really changed that for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's an avenue to 90 wins. Like, this team, the pitching staff is good.
Right.
Pitching staff is legitimate, and I think
both starting and bullpen.
Right, right.
It
looks, I tell you what, the bullpen, I feel like, might have just picked up another really legit guy kind of that they had in-house in Nick Birdie.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really transitioned himself.
Ooh, he was filthy on, wasn't that opening day?
Opening
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
He transitioned himself, in my eyes, from probably going to make the roster because he's a Rule 5 guy to wow, man, he earned his way onto this roster. And then he goes and strikes out the side on opening day.
Yeah.
One outing, 10 innings in spring. I know. That's pitching's going to be strong. Can they hit? Can they score enough runs? Last year, their run differential was one. They allowed one more run than they scored. And they still finished above 500. You tip the scales a little bit, you know? You score 20, 30, 40 more runs. You know, does that take you from 82 to 88? Is that, you know, does that put you in contention on July 28th and maybe they decide to augment the team?
Right.
Which I think is a big thing because that's the other problem, right? If they're 500 but not really in the division race on July 28th.
Maybe you trade Savelli. Maybe you trade Jung Ho if he's good. Dickerson,
right.
Yeah.
Right, Jung Ho possibly because you got Ke'Bryan Hayes coming soon.
Right.
The question I have about that is not so much what could you get for Jung Ho, but just with the off-the-field stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to just lump in off-the-field stuff for our listeners here. That's three DUIs and a sexual assault allegation. No charges. So this isn't just like...
Yeah,
boy, you know, generic.
But it's there.
It's there. That's kind of my, and that's a wild card. I don't think we know that. If they're in a position to add at the deadline, and they do, you know, and that I think a lot of this too depends on once Polanco get back.
Mm-hmm.
There's an avenue to upper 80s to 90. A lot has to go right.
Right.
Gong has to produce. I think you got to get a better offensive season out of Bell. I think you got to get... I don't know if Frazier's going to do what he did from July 25th on again all season.
But if he does, you're looking at...
But if he gets 75% of the way there...
Right.
At 145 games at second base, that's pretty solid.
Any concern with Gong not being in the lineup on opening day here at Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and yes and no. So it's like I go back and forth on this. Clint's rationale was Gong is 1-for-9 against Wainwright. Melky Cabrera is out of the lineup, and Pablo Reyes is starting right. Melky's 1-for-11 against him. A, small sample size, and B, it's not the same Adam Wainwright. There was a great article on Fangraphs that talked about how, I think it was Joe Girardi, no, it wasn't Girardi, somebody justified not using a star player against CC Sabathia because of his batter-pitcher splits against him.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed like when those at-bats took place, and like half of them were when CC was hurt, half of them were when he had made a delivery change, and like it just looking at the batter pitcher splits doesn't give you the whole story.
Right.
So to say, oh, you know, he's, you know, Gong is 1-for-9, and Gong hits righties better than he does lefties. Like, so.
Well, and Gong also had a double just yesterday. Right. I mean, you know.
Now, the counterpoint is Clint is a big believer, and I'm kind of in agreement with him on this, in that if you want your bench to be productive, you have to play them. You got to get them in the lineup, you got to get them at bats. Because then if you just start Gong every day and then you got a double switch and you need Moran to come off the bench late and give you a knock and he hasn't taken a plate appearance in 5 days, you know, he's going to be – so I get that. I do understand that. But I think then to justify it with batter pitcher splits kind of takes away from that aspect.
Right. Yeah, and it's one of those things. We'll see how that plays out. Going to be a long season as we're only 3 into 162. This has been the Bias Bull One with Bill Brink on Locked On Pirates. Bill, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been fun. I hope I can come back and get locked on with you guys again.
Let's do it. Thanks, Bill.